This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Adam Hochberg. It's been a tumultuous week for Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump, to put it mildly. Over the weekend, he attacked the parents of a fallen soldier. He faced immediate backlash, even from some members of his own party. Yesterday, President Obama said Trump was unfit to be president and invited Republicans to join in his rebuke.
The question I think that they have to ask themselves is, if you are repeatedly having to say in very strong terms that what he has said is unacceptable, why are you still endorsing him?
Meanwhile, a bunch of smaller controversies are swirling around the Trump campaign. Yesterday, he refused to endorse House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senator John McCain in their re-election bids. He suggested his opponents are planning to commit fraud to rig the election against him. And to top it off, he appeared to lash out at a crying baby at one of his rallies. With a little more than 3 months until Election Day, how will these latest uproars affect Trump's chances in North Carolina, and how might they impact the governor's race and other down-ballot elections? We'll try to answer those questions with Michael Bitzer. He's a professor of history and politics at Catawba College. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Glad to be with you.
So the dispute that Trump has had with this military family, the Khans, it's been described by a lot of pundits as a potentially pivotal moment in the general election. Do you see it that way?
Well, we have talked about so many pivotal moments in the Trump candidacy, starting with the attack on John McCain, leading through the attacks on immigrants, the issue with the judge who is overseeing Trump University and any Mexican or Latino Hispanic connections there, heritage. It is unbelievable in terms of how political scientists and analysts have been viewing the Trump campaign and all of these things that we think, okay, that is the moment that it should basically destroy the Trump campaign, he manages to continue through. And I think with his poll numbers, while he will probably take a hit in some way, his core supporters are willing to support him through thick and thin. So I would be surprised if, while there may be some retribution against these comments, the likelihood is his supporters are behind him 100%.
We have seen Hillary Clinton take a pretty sizable lead in most national polls, back up really to where she was before the FBI report was issued about her emails. Is that, do you think, just a convention bounce or a temporary thing, or is this becoming a more permanent trend where she's starting to lead by a 6 or 8 point margin in the polls?
I think we'll have to wait and have a couple more weeks to see if this is truly baked in and if this convention bounce solidifies. I mean, what we generally tend to see nowadays is coming out of those major media events, the bounce certainly is there, but typically we tend to settle back into, with Labor Day, the general fall campaign really begin in earnest. If she isn't able to keep this bounce, and if the consequence for Donald Trump is continued slides or this peel off of support based on these comments, she could be entering September with a good, healthy lead. But the surprising thing is it's not overwhelming. She will probably be at 50%, maybe in the high 40s. He could be in the low 40s to the high 30s, but it's still very much a race towards November.
I'm going to ask you a tough question. Help me understand what's going on in Donald Trump's brain. I know there have been cases where politicians might say something controversial, might say something that even offends part of the electorate, but there's a political calculation there that they'll offend this group, but they're going to appeal to an even larger group. You know, we've certainly seen with politicians like Jesse Helms in North Carolina, they were divisive. They may say something that offends a minority group, but they were trying to appeal to a larger group of conservative white voters in Jesse Helms' case. What is Donald Trump trying to do here politically to lash out at this military family? How does that help him politically?
I'm not a political psychologist, so I would hesitate to try and get inside Donald Trump's head. Let me make two points. The first is, look at his history and his life expanse, and what he has done is basically go it alone. He has developed his brand, he has developed an image, and through participation in his TV shows, he is the great decider. He is the great individual that everything is focused around. If you watch his television show, he is the one who says, "You're fired." He's making the choice. He's making the decisions. Now, when it comes to political strategy, what we have seen develop in modern campaigns is that willingness to take into account political calculations. Yes, I may offend this group, but I'm reinforcing with another group. And what he's doing, I think, is reinforcing his image to his base supporters. The problem is his base supporters may not necessarily be a majority in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, but he is gathering that sense of, I am the great decider, it is all about me. And for whatever reason, more importantly, his supporters like that in him. And, you know, I heard one veteran say, yeah, I was offended by his attacks on the Khans and Gold Star families, but I'm still supporting him. And that takes a kind of level of political psychology I don't understand, because nowadays I would think that that would be the death knell.
What do you think other Republicans should do now? President Obama yesterday put them in an interesting spot. They can continue to support Trump and maybe pay a political price with moderates, or they can distance themselves and maybe look like they're getting intimidated by a Democratic president. What do Republicans do?
I think that's an even harder question to try and answer, to be quite honest. I think people like a Richard Burr, like a Pat McCrory, but also a Kelly Ayotte, a Rob Portman, folks that are in traditional presidential Democratic states who are Republicans running for re-election really have to be looking at this and going, what do I do? Do I distance myself from my party? Do I literally put country above party in this context? Do you tick off then your base of supporters? Because if we're looking at this election as a base year election, you have to depend on that base of reliable voters to come your way. Or do you try to ride this out? I think for folks who are down ballot officers and candidates, boy, this is going to be one of the hardest campaigns to try and figure out from a strategy point of view. What do I do with this constant barrage of things that I can't control that are factored in from the outside, from the top of the ticket?
Well, you mentioned Governor McCrory and Senator Burr. Both of them are up for re-election this year. Both have appeared with Trump as recently as last week. Here's how Governor McCrory at a Trump rally in Winston-Salem last week spoke about Donald Trump.
Let me tell you why we need an outsider. We need an outsider because right now as governor, I'm responsible for the public safety of North Carolina, and yet we have no idea about the Syrian refugees coming into our country. President Obama is not communicating with this governor, with the head of our patrol, with the head of public safety. Even with the FBI does not know who's coming into North Carolina from Syria. That's not right. That's why we need an outsider.
Governor Pat McCrory speaking at a rally for Donald Trump in Winston-Salem last week. Michael, the governor went on to speak about more reasons why we need an outsider. He actually only mentioned Donald Trump's name once in his remarks. What do you make of that?
It sounds very much to me that Governor McCrory is looking at this as a base year election, that indeed he recognizes that if you can elevate and energize the hardcore supporters that are going to vote 98-99% of the time for your party, that those reliable voters are the people to target going into the fall election. So even though he mentioned Trump's name only once in those remarks, he was hitting on themes that are very closely tied to Trump. and also very well received by Trump supporters. So certainly, I think the decision looks like it's being made. Go for a base year election. Don't necessarily worry about the moderates. They may be turned off completely. The independent swing voters may look at both parties and say, I can't stand either one of them, so I'm not going to show up. So the chips look like they're being placed on a base year election. And that's true also, I think, for Roy Cooper and the way his strategy is playing out as well.
Quickly, is that a good strategy in North Carolina, the way the state is growing and changing? Do we even know what that base looks like from election to election now?
I think both sides are pretty much sitting at maybe a 40 to 42, 43% strong base connection. The question is, can you find more of those base voters, get them to show up to vote, much like what Barack Obama did in 2008? Or are you going to try and appeal to those moderate swing independent voters that are maybe 10, 12, maybe 15% of North Carolina electorate? That's the trend that I'm going to be looking for in polls coming out come September.
Michael Bitzer, professor of history and politics at Catawba College. Michael, thanks for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Just ahead on The State of Things, Frank Stacio talks with the founder of one of the nation's most successful gang intervention programs. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.